On this episode of Monmouth Weekly, University President Patrick Leahy talks about the role Monmouth University plays in issues of race, diversity, and inclusion, plus updates on the fall semester and enrollment information. This is faculty member Matt Harmon. It's episode number 12 of Monmouth Weekly. Thanks, as always, for joining us. After taking a little week off last week, we are back with our Monmouth Weekly podcast. It is episode number 12. I say a very good morning. We record early here in mid-June. And certainly the world today, and over the course of, to be fair, the beginning of March when schools and universities started to shut down, and now as the United States and perhaps worldwide deal with racial issues, the death of George Floyd back in late May in Minneapolis has sparked so many feelings, protests around the world, and a need for change. And I say good morning to my broadcast partner. He is University President Patrick Leahy, faculty member Matt Harmon, and good to be back with you. Last week's week off, a scheduled week off, we're more than likely going to a bi-weekly during the summer with not as much news and information, with always the opportunity to come on when we like. And President Leahy, first, a good morning, but I think important that we just kind of hop into this right away. It's impossible, I think, for you and I to sit here and just start with how's summer enrollment going and what's the plan for the fall, things that we will certainly get to in our podcast as we always do. But as you see what is taking place across the country, across the world, and as president, as basically the voice and the face of the university, what are your initial reactions and thoughts to what is taking place, the conversations that are happening, and the need for change?
Well, good morning to you, Matt. And I missed you last week, so I'm glad to be back together this week. And as you say, going forward, we'll determine how frequently we host these as the news warrants. But you're right. Before we get into our normal updates, it's, I think, important to talk about what's happening at Monmouth University. And our institution is struggling with the same challenges that our nation is struggling with right now. And I have spent the last couple weeks, I guess, engaged in some very real, very difficult conversations with a lot of members of our Monmouth University community. And I've just committed to each of them that I will do everything I can to be accessible to them. I will listen more than I talk at this point, and I will try very, very, very hard to understand better the challenges that members of our Black community are facing. I said during our open call last week, I started the whole call by saying, you know, I'm not exactly sure what to say, because I am as privileged as they come. You know, a white, middle-aged male, heterosexual, cisgender male, I have had all of the privileges and then some in my life. And so I'll never fully understand what our members of our Black community face in our country, but I'm certainly willing to try to gain a better understanding and a greater appreciation, and hopefully it will result ultimately in positive action to make sure that Monmouth University is living up to its commitments as a genuinely inclusive, genuinely welcoming, genuinely anti-racist community.
When you think about it, I know during the course of earlier this week, you had a meeting with your Advisory Council on Diversity and Inclusion, two words that certainly have been, I'll say, hot words, and maybe have been ignored a little bit too much across the country. Diversity, inclusion, those words being so important when you factor them in with the word change, not necessarily the ins and outs of the council in terms of who's on it, but having that advisory council, what maybe goal are you hoping that can come out of that, other than what you just stated, an opportunity to listen, an opportunity maybe to learn a little bit more from others on campus?
Yeah, this President's Advisory Council on Diversity and Inclusion is a group of, represents a cross-section of all of the employees, all the functions at the university. And we had an opportunity to visit this past week for close to, I guess, an hour and a half, for 2 hours, and mostly just listen to hear what's on their minds and individually and what they're hearing around the campus. And this was one of maybe a dozen meetings that I've hosted or been party to over the last week or so with different members of the community, whether it's a student group or a faculty group. Some alums have reached out to me. Board members have reached out to me. Lots of conversations that we've had about the state of race relations in our country. And my hope is that this Council on Diversity and Inclusion can do what is embedded in its title, Matt, which is to advise the president on the ways in which the actions that we need to take in order to improve who we are here at Monmouth. And very grateful for their support in that regard. But it will be one of a lot of different groups from which we will collect ideas going forward.
Just as well, President Leahy, for clarification, your advisory council on diversity and inclusion is separate from the existing intercultural center that takes place on campus.
It is, although the director of the intercultural center, Zanetta Rago Kraft, who joined the university just a couple weeks before I did, in fact, she's the chair of the president's advisory council. So those two groups are really inextricably linked in many respects. And Zanetta has done such a great job helping to improve, as you pointed out, improve the genuine support of diversity and inclusion on campus since she's been here only that, you know, within this first year.
Also, you know, listen, you and I have spent some time both in fun and in serious with dealing with the earlier coronavirus situation, which clearly has not gone either, talking about being a father, being a parent, how do you deal with situations as they come up? And I know when it comes to all of the racial issues, you see the protests taking place. Again, you see the need for change taking place. I've had the opportunity to sit and try and talk with my own kids, and I'm sure you're trying to do that as well. And I would consider myself a little bit of a, I wouldn't even say history buff, but I do love history, thinking of how things took place. And this is certainly one of those moments. It's a monumental moment in our nation's country that will be talked about. 2020, good, bad, indifferent, or however you view it, it will be viewed as a change in the world moving forward. How do you incorporate what's taking place when you talk to any of your four kids about this?
Yeah, and I hope it is a date that we'll remember when things changed in America. I've said many times on our podcast before how proud I am to be the father of four kids, and two of them are in college. My two older daughters are in college, so they're very versed on these matters and very insightful. In fact, I learn a ton from them about genuine diversity and inclusion and racism. It's my boys that I'm struggling to try to engage them in this conversation. I mean, they're 13 and 15. My youngest son the other day, when we were talking about this and watching news clips, he just turned to me and he said, why do people hate each other so much? And
it's such a great, it's such a great question, isn't it?
Oh my gosh. I mean, I get choked up even thinking about it, Matt, because he just doesn't quite even at 13 understand. I mean, I think he understands the events and he understands the facts of the situation, but he doesn't understand the root causes, and he doesn't understand quite yet the years and years and years of feelings that have emerged in this particular situation. And he's struggling to get his head around that. You know, I think it was Nelson Mandela who said that, let's remember that kids need to be taught to hate. You know, the kids aren't born, it doesn't seem, with that kind of spirit. They are taught that by us adults. So I think we need to just, you know, look at the mirrors ourselves, those of us who are raising kids, and make sure that we're doing the things that we need to do to make sure that that our kids' future is different from today. And I think we'll talk about this later, but I was so moved by the Black Lives Matter event that Athletics hosted the other day, and something that Faith said. She said, I just want to be the last generation that needs to protest. And I sure hope that that's the case.
Yeah, you said we will talk about it. The beauty of this is we can go from one to the next pretty quick. Let's talk about the Black Lives Matter Hawk Talk panel. It took place earlier this week on the university's athletic Facebook page. It's something that you can still access. There were current and former Monmouth athletes and head coach King Rice. Recent article, if you hadn't had an opportunity to watch it, I would obviously invite those to go do that. But there was an article in the Asbury Park Press as well that kind of surmised some of King Rice's thoughts about Monmouth still being able to do better, but also doing pretty well, doing things correctly when it comes to how Black people of color are treated on campus. When you hear things like that, it's a good and bad, I guess, in a way. Yes, Monmouth does do things pretty well in a lot of cases, but just like anything else, President Leahy, Monmouth, I'm sure, like any other school and institution across the country, can probably find ways to do better.
We have to do better. I've had too many conversations in my first 9 or 10 months, Matt, that suggest that we're not where we want and need to be. And I encourage everybody to spend a few minutes listening to that broadcast. I was so moved by the individual stories of current students and fairly recent alumni. King Rice is such a leader in our community, and it is so comforting to have him helping to lead Monmouth University, especially now, but in general. And he said some nice things about me and believing that I think the term was that it's possible that I could be a difference maker here at Monmouth. And I wrote to him and I just said how much I appreciate his comments of support, and that I'll do everything I can to live up to his high expectations. So I encourage everybody to take a few minutes to listen to those stories and it'll feel a lot more real to you if you do.
When you think of the students, the athletic side of things, and what they did the other night, being one side of it, obviously so much, as you said, going on campus in a world and an age right now where nobody's really even on campus. Students aren't on campus because all summer class is being held remotely, but you see students right now being active. I'll lead you into one of the first things I saw from more of a public standpoint. China Walker, the president of SAGE, delivering a pretty powerful message a couple of weeks ago through social media.
you know, it was one of the first things I saw released from Monmouth following George Floyd's death. And I was so impressed with that message that she delivered. And parts of it, if you've heard it, talk about privilege. And that's important for those of us who have it to hear. And I've had a chance subsequently to talk with China. She's been involved in a few of these meetings that I've hosted. And I'm just so impressed with her maturity and her outlook and her passion. She is also one of the real leaders here at Monmouth. And I'm so glad to have her part of the community.
When I say SAGE, I just want to be clear, that is one of the student groups on campus, students advocating girls' education. But that's not the only diversity inclusion type group on campus, President Leahy. When you think of it, Monmouth does offer a pretty wide variety of clubs, organizations, fraternities, sororities, all with the idea of people trying to feel included and hopefully enough and maybe continuing to build now under today's climate and that need for change, that there is enough diversity on campus and diversity options, maybe I should say, on campus.
And, you know, I think I always tout we have 120 clubs and organizations that support students outside the classroom. A couple of additional clubs or organizations have emerged just in the last few weeks. And I'm very supportive of that. I mean, I want our students and even our faculty and staff, some groups have formed in our faculty and staff, and I encourage that, Matt. I want people to band together and to have the conversations. I want them to find those places on campus where they can feel most comfortable. But I do not want that to replace the university as a whole being the place where everybody feels comfortable. I mean, you know, I there's a little bit of a risk in having, you know, a continued proliferation of small subgroups in that I don't want that to fracture the university. I want that to be a source of support so that all those groups can come together under a Monmouth University culture that is, as we say, generally welcoming to everybody. So I know that that's on me and that's on the institution to create that kind of culture. I want to make sure that as these groups, even more groups emerge and some of the existing groups strengthen, that we both support that, but also make sure that people are brought together in one unified culture here at Monmouth.
Episode number 12 of our Monmouth Weekly podcast with University President Patrick Leahy. I'm faculty member Matt Harmon. President Leahy, as you think about the students on campus and still not quite a year into your position at Monmouth, but you've been dealing with students for so long, your 7 years up at Wilkes, so you're well-versed, should I say, in dealing with this age student population, having kids of your own. I'm sure you've heard, and maybe you can share some of these stories, having Mama students during this time, instead of you reaching out to them, probably the reverse. And there are Mama students engaged in things like fundraising and being involved with protests and trying to spread the message of the need for change. How often have you had maybe those back and forth conversations with some of the student population on campus?
I mean, a lot of the communication to this point has been via email, and I'm receiving countless emails, and I'm trying really hard to make sure that I'm responsive to each individual person who reaches out to me, whether it's a student or faculty or staff member or an alum. It's just a commitment I've tried to make to be as accessible as possible. The nice thing is from those email communications, this dialogue is emerging. And as I mentioned, I've already had a bunch of meetings. I have another one scheduled, I think it's tomorrow, with club leaders all over campus. So a really large Zoom call where we've invited all of the club leaders. Again, the idea that let's make sure that we're bringing the leaders of the respective groups together and ensuring that we're confirming our values of creating the kind of Monmouth University-wide community that we want. So I'm just trying to be as available as I can to them. And again, I try to be as understanding as I can to students who are hurting right now and are going through a really tough time. And I hope they feel comfortable at this university at this time to voice their concerns. I've said to the students the other day, Matt, I said, as hard as this is for you to share your personal experiences, I have to know about this because I can't be helpful in solving problems that I don't know about. And I know that for some of them, it takes great courage to share their experiences. And I just want to continue to encourage that.
You know, thinking of some of the words that have been those buzzwords, diversity, inclusion, an email that you sent to the entire campus community a little bit more than a week ago, you mentioned that the incoming 2024 class would be the most diverse class in Monmouth's history, which is obviously a good thing. But how does Monmouth, even in that way, continue to get better? And if you want to use New Jersey, the Northeast, and then spread it even nationwide, how does Monmouth continue to maybe be someone that students, parents, educators would look at and say, wow, they've become a leader in an issue like this?
One of the things I'm learning is, I've tout all the time, you know this through our conversations, how proud I am that we're going to welcome the most racially diverse class ever at Monmouth, if our numbers hold, and we'll talk about that in a minute, I guess. But, you know, if our numbers hold, it will be. In fact, it'll be the best class we've ever enrolled. It will be a really good size. It'll be the best academically prepared class that we've ever had. And it'll be the most racially diverse class we've ever had. Just last year, 28% of the incoming class was racially diverse. And in 1 year, that's jumped to close to 32%. So I'm really proud of that. I want Monmouth to be known as a place where students want to come. And I think one of the things I've learned, however, is that our student body is diversifying more quickly than our university is. And what I mean by that is we need to do a better job recruiting diverse faculty members. We need to do a better job recruiting diverse staff members. We need to do a better job, you know, bringing diverse men and women to the highest administrative ranks at this university. I know that. I appreciate that. So we're at once excited, but a little bit nervous because, as I always say, our goal is not just to bring students to Monmouth. It is to bring them here, to give them life-transforming experiences, and then to graduate them 4 years later. And so we can't take our eye off of recruiting them is only one part of the story. We need to make sure that we're building the infrastructure to support an increasingly diverse student body.
We are recording here mid-June, which means that the summer schedule is up and going, all of those classes being held remotely. And in our last couple minutes, I wanted to spend a little bit of time just giving some updates to some of this. I want to start, President Leahy, if we can, with the financial situation, because I think that is a piece that is still very important for students, whether they are paying for summer classes, whether they are trying to figure a way to make sure that they get back in the fall, because families, students, individuals have been hit so hard during this pandemic situation with coronavirus. The relief fund, I know, is continuing. You are trying to get money out as much as you possibly can. Monmouth has already been one of the first schools to announce refunds for housing and fees and meal plans and things like that. But when you think of it, what's the role that you could see for the university trying to play from a financial standpoint in trying to, again, make sure that students feel comfortable and we'll be okay coming back in the fall.
Well, just to back up quickly, you know, from the outset, from the, you know, onset of the global pandemic, we have tried to make decisions that are in the best interest of our students in general, and in the best interest of our high financial need students in particular. And, you know, we've talked about the how quick we refunded unused room, meal, and parking fees, and the establishment of the President's Relief Fund, and keeping all on-campus jobs whole, even though we knew that those jobs, you know, wouldn't be productive. Those were all efforts to try to ensure that we were supporting our students, in particular our high financial needs students. We just recently completed the redistribution of the Federal CARES Act money. And I just want to share that when the Federal CARES Act was passed and the guidelines were handed down, it simply said, you have a significant discretion to distribute these funds as you wish. And we would encourage you to distribute them to your higher financial need students. So we looked at that and said, this is consistent with our values as a university anyway. So we developed a methodology, if you will, that would direct these funds to any of our students, any student enrolled here in the spring who had unmet need, which is a sophisticated financial aid calculation, but any student with unmet need. And we distributed it out, all that money in round one. And then it's been pretty widely reported that it came to our attention that some of our Pell Grant students had not received that federal CARES money. And you might ask, well, how could a federal Pell Grant student not receive that money? Well, it's because when we ran our financial calculations, they didn't show any unmet need because of the grant money that they were receiving from the federal and state government and because of our own institutional support. So when we determined that, we went ahead and distributed round two to all of those additional Pell Grant students, even if they didn't have unmet need. So right now, we've pretty much depleted the money that the federal government has given us. And I can say that every Pell Grant student here, or Pell-like student at the graduate level, and any other student at the undergraduate or graduate level who has any unmet need at all through that financial calculation, have in fact received or will soon relief from the Federal CARES Act. And I feel very positive as a university that we've redistributed that money from the federal government consistent with our values to try to be extra supportive of our high financial needs students. So that's what we've done to this point. And then going forward, you know, we've continued to flood the system in additional financial aid so that students coming here or students who are returning here to Monmouth have access to the support that they need to continue their education. So I feel very positive about the decisions that the university has made to try to be as supportive as we can to our students during this admittedly very challenging time.
Using the word positive as a good transition, I know in talking with you and we've spoke about it specifically on our Monmouth Weekly podcast, you were encouraged by summer enrollment in that the last time I think we checked, which was 2 weeks ago, numbers were very good. And as you roll through, I think the third of the five sessions is either starting or just about set to start, summer A, B, C, D, and E. At least two of those I know are up and going right now. Are those numbers still as positive as they were 2 weeks ago?
Yes. I mean, I always say the great dichotomy here is that the campus is still essentially closed, yet we're having the most robust summer online academic program that we've ever had. So looks can be deceiving if you drive by campus and see it more quiet than normal. This summer, our credits and the number of students enrolled is exceeding last year. And last year, as I've said, is way above the year before that. So I'm just really proud that the faculty have, as robustly as they have migrated courses online and are serving so many students this summer while we get ready for the fall.
Which leads into leading into the fall. I know right now the campus is still closed. It's usually so busy between classes, camps, everything going on. And not to discount or dismiss any of that, but I think people are probably thinking, wow, what is the plan for the fall? And it's probably pretty hard to answer that question until the state comes up with a little bit more guidance and a plan. But as you see, the state kind of easing some restrictions and a little bit of normalcy coming back. Are you encouraged? Are you optimistic? Are you somewhere in between that the campus could be open come September?
I'm more optimistic now than I was last week, and that was more than the week before and the week before. I as you point out, Matt, as the restrictions loosen here in the state, that's giving us more and more hope that we're going to be able to develop that really safe, responsible pathway to a fall reopening and bringing students back to campus to live and bringing students back to campus for their both curricular and extracurricular activities. We won't know for sure until the state issues its guidelines, but I sense that they are coming shortly as well. Perhaps as soon as the next week or so. Once those guidelines emerge, we refine our opening plan in the fall, and then we commit to it and start publicizing that to our incoming students and our returning students. So I know for weeks now I've been saying we just don't know yet. I can't say even today that I know exactly yet, but I can tell you with some degree of certainty that it won't be long now before we have the clarity that we need and that everybody seeks about how we're going to be able to open in the fall. So
at our next
broadcast, whether it's next week or 2 weeks, hopefully we'll have a lot more to talk about in terms of fall opening.
You know, I was going to just say, let's close with this because, being a faculty member and getting all the emails, the one thing that I think could be certain is that every option is on the table. I saw something within the last 2 weeks from, I believe, the task force that has been looking at all the different potential options. I mean, literally, there was, I don't know, somewhere between 12 to 15 plans, and they were very different. So literally, when I say every option is on the table, that's probably a good thing because you mentioned until you get the guidelines from the state, you can't really pick, okay, this is what we're going to do until you really find out what's taking right. place. But all those options are there. And yeah. And I think the one thing that's nice is that what's the most important thing, making sure that students, faculty, staff, administration all feel pretty safe and pretty positive about coming back to work.
I mean, you mentioned 15. There were 15 or so that we've collected from around higher ed based on what we've seen in the press and heard from other schools. We've added a couple of our own unique scenarios. And we, as you point out, we've sort of tried to consider what are the complexities of any one of those. In that list is an option for us, and a good option, as you say, a safe, responsible option. But we won't be able to select it until the guidelines come out. So I'm so grateful because the cross-campus collaboration has been fantastic. I mean, the faculty, the staff, the even student input into this has been really excellent. And I think that's going to stand us in good stead when we choose a scenario and then set about the task of preparing that scenario for the fall.
President Leahy, as always, I appreciate your time. Great conversation here today and one that I know you have been entrenched with when it comes to diversity, inclusion, the racial issues, people feeling comfortable being on campus, throw in all of the summer, fall information that Monmouth will continue to kind of provide. But this is, as you said, as a parent and a father and a university president, a very crazy time, but hopefully a time that at some point in the near and then distant future, history will look back and say that's where change took place. And Monmouth, I know, will be part of it.
I think it's on us, Matt, and it's going to take a commitment from everybody at this university, starting with me. And as I said, I hope I can live up to some of the expectations. And that is my plan, is to try to figure out, in collaboration with our colleagues, many of whom have been at this university a lot longer than I have, maybe safe to say all of whom have been at this university a lot longer than I have, together we will figure out how to proceed and make Monmouth again a better, more full representation of our stated goals. And that is a commitment that I feel very personally and will take very personally.
This wraps up episode number 12. We thank you, as always, for giving us part of your day, staying up to date with all the latest news and information that involves Monmouth University. Go to monmouth.edu for continued updates. We'll be back next week or 2 weeks, depending on if anything pops up on our Monmouth Weekly podcast. Again, for University President Patrick Leahy, this is faculty member Matt Harmon. Thanks, as always, for listening. Episode 12 comes to a close. We'll see you again in the near future.